Hey guys, and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor. I'm going to be your host today. If it sounds like I'm a little down, there's a reason, and you can look at the title. That's kind of the reason. I'm joined, as always, by my two special co-hosts, Drew and Tristan. Tristan, let's start with you. How you doing today, man?
I'm vindicated. You know, we're finally talking about a project that I've, you know, been saying we should, you know, watch for, what is it, about a year now? When did we do our retrospective for the TV series? That was, you know, not October.
We started our retrospective tour on the TV series. We watched the first two seasons, and then we didn't watch the third season, which made me sad because it's maybe...
We watched something, a superior adaptation, just now, is what we're talking about today. But
all right,
when was the
end of Tristan on Nerds Talk Movies. Drew, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. The adaptation that you guys are talking about, I was not on that one because I was BMT.
What the hell does BMT mean?
Before my time.
Oh, I just learned something new today.
I didn't know that either. That's good.
There you go. Look at that. I'm going to use that, Drew.
You can thank one of my ex-girlfriends for that.
Shout out to ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, so I'm doing pretty well. Got to see Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin a while ago, so, you know, all good things.
Yeah, there's some good things there. Let's just go ahead and get to the damn thing, all right?
Okay, Taylor, I know you have the deadpan voice, but come on, a little bit more, come on.
So have some enthusiasm. Come on, this was a big deal in our childhoods.
Okay, full transparency. If people don't know, I'm gonna quickly explain this. So, for the past few months, we've been putting some recommendations from all three of us, both movies and television shows, and we've been putting into a wheel. Whatever the wheel lands on, we'll put it on our schedule.
Mind you, Taylor introduced this, and me and Drew were heavily opposed at first.
Well, yep. it was to also give both of you more of a say in what we cover. Because
sure, but we liked the anarchy where we could just shout over each other.
Yep.
That's where Drew and I thrive. That's how we ran the comic book club back in the day.
It's true. Technically, Tristan was only treasurer, but you'd be surprised how many topics he brought up.
You'd be shocked how much I domineered the conversation. Or maybe you wouldn't.
To make a long story long, and also I'm not really too surprised, Tristan. To make a long story long, both because Tristan and Drew have recommended this movie so many times, I also went, you know what? Maybe I am too harsh. I'm going to put 2003's Daredevil on the recommendations for our upcoming slate. And it landed on that. So because I did this to myself.
You did this to us.
This was honestly a self-inflicted wound. So let's just go ahead and get into it. You saw the title. You clicked on this episode. You know the deal. Today, we are talking about 2003's Daredevil. It's safe to say that the Marvel Netflix Daredevil series revitalized The Man Without Fear with mainstream audiences. It was a dark and brooding series that wasn't devoid of comedy, but it wasn't 100% following the tried and true MCU formula, which was really starting to boom at the time. And people loved the series for that very reason, alongside its characters, action sequences, and just so much more that we aren't getting into. However, long before the Marvel Netflix series showed a darker side of Daredevil, and before he was born again for Disney+,
see what you did there.
We had only one mainline adaptation of the character, a 2003 movie starring Ben Affleck as Matt Murdock. Despite pulling in more than decent numbers at the box office, the 2003 adaptation was, well, to kind of put it simply, people didn't like it. All right. But what do we think? Now, almost two decades later, by the way, what do we think? I think you can tell what I think based off the intro to this thing.
I may need radar sense to figure it out.
Almost two decades later, is it still as bad as people say it was? Or should we be a little less harsh on this movie? That's what we're going to talk about here today. Here's a synopsis for the film, along with some of the cast and crew, courtesy of IMDb. Quote, a man blinded by toxic waste, which also enhanced his remaining senses, fights crime as an acrobatic martial arts superhero, end quote. It was directed and written by Mark Steven Johnson. It stars Ben Affleck as Matt Murdock slash Daredevil, Michael Clark Duncan as Wilson Fisk slash the Kingpin, Jennifer Gardner as Elektra, Colin Farrell as Bullseye, and Jon Favreau as Franklin Foggy Nelson. And here are two characters I was shocked to see in the movie because I didn't remember them at all. We have Karen Page, played by Ellen Pompeo, and Ben Urich, who was played by Joe Pantoliano.
We need him in more movies again. He dominated the late 90s and early 2000s, and I need that energy.
Was he in The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals?
I don't know. I think he was in The Fugitive. He was also in The Matrix, and he was in Memento. And he's in Bad Boys. He's the captain in Bad Boys. Like, Joe Pantoliano was nailed. He even was, the shitty stepdad in Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief. You know, what a bad adaptation that was.
Yeah. I don't even like the books, and I was surprised about that.
I'm sorry, you don't like the Percy? That's, we're getting off topic. We'll talk about that off air. Percy Jackson books are great. Everyone look forward to the Disney Plus show. Taylor, continue.
But first off, do you guys have any interesting tidbits about this movie that are worth sharing?
You mean like it's comic book inspiration?
Or like just personal connection to the film?
Any personal connections, any bits of trivia? For instance, it seems like Ben Affleck really doesn't like this movie, and I can't really blame him for it.
I mean, hey, it's where he like met the mother of his children, so, some good came out of it.
I'm saying it seems like as a movie.
I mean, understandably so. I have a couple tidbits, Drew, if you don't mind me going first.
Go ahead.
So, when I was younger, now, I joked at the beginning that this is a period adaptation. This is a bad movie. Like, the Daredevil Netflix show, much, much better. Charlie Cox, much, much better as Daredevil. I was being sarcastic. But I'd be lying if I said that there aren't some bits about this film and its, connections and little tidbits that I don't find really entertaining and really endearing. So, A, the reason why Ben Affleck took this role as Matt Murdock slash Daredevil is because he and Matt Damon, actually, were such big comic book fans as children. And Matt Damon told him, he's like, if you don't take the role, I will. So, there's a fun little tidbit there. As for a personal tidbit, this is the movie that, or this is was really like my first exposure to the Daredevil character, as flawed and objectively bad as it is. So I just have a lot of sentimental value for this movie. And hot take, I know it's crap. I would never like toe to toe put it against any MCU movie in terms of quality, but You put a few margaritas in me. Tristan's going to turn this on before he turns on probably 3/4 of anything that's come out of Marvel since 2008. So, there's my tidbit.
So, for me, Daredevil, it was not one of the characters I was into before. And ironically, like Tristan, this is one of the movies that made me give him a chance.
And right. Well, because how old were we when this came out? This was 2003, so you and I would have been, what, like 5 and 6? Something like that?
Close to that age.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I would say I was about 8.
Yeah, so
Grandpa.
So this was one of the things that gave me a chance, and luckily for me, Daredevil Born Again was my first story for Daredevil.
And, what a masterpiece.
Yeah, and it's like I can definitely see some inspiration for that here, but I'll say it. I like this movie.
You and me both.
It's like I will never say that this movie is good. In fact, I would say that it's one of the lesser, not bad, but the lesser of comic book adaptations. But honestly, it is one of the better adaptations of the early 2000s.
See, I'll take it.
Yeah, it wasn't until 5 years later that we would get probably one of the best revitalizations of the comic book genre. That spawned off literally a movement in an empire.
Actually, you know what? See, Drew, I 100% agree with everything you said. But over the course of this podcast, I'm going to make a case here. There's really only three things that are actively wrong with this movie. And if they changed those three things, we'd be riding a bit higher on this. Okay. Now, should I save these things for the general thoughts, Taylor, or do you want me to pop them off now?
I want him to save them for the general thoughts.
I'll save them. I'll save them for the thoughts.
I'm interested in this.
Tristan's going to be making a case here. I'm a Daredevil 2003 apologist after watching, and I didn't, you know, that I have not watched this movie in at least a year. At least a year. But now, having watched it this weekend, I'm like, you know what? Maybe some of this holds up a little better than I thought.
Yeah, I haven't watched this movie since before Batman v Superman, because I literally watched...
You wanted to get that Ben Affleck taste. You wanted to see what he was going to bring to the role.
Yes.
And boy, what a glow up in terms of just a performance, because, man, I know a lot of people don't like BVS, but everyone can agree Ben Affleck did a great job with what he was given in that movie. And he did a job with what he was given in this.
So, in terms of Daredevil 2003, though, let's talk some comic connections real quick. How does this movie adaptation measure up to the comics? Who wants to go first here? And by the way, if anybody's listening for the first time, my two fellow co-hosts here, Drew and Tristan, are huge comic book nerds.
Huge.
They are very knowledgeable in a wide variety of Marvel and DC comics, and I'm pretty sure some other comics, too.
Yes.
That we'll eventually get into.
See our Invincible, spoiler cast a year ago, if you're curious.
I wasn't on that one, so freaking mad I wasn't, and if there's a way...
Season 2.
Redo
it, you'll be on there for Season 2, Drew.
Yes, I will. And Invincible is my jam. It's like my crack for comic books. So
What a good series. But Drew, I'll let you go first on comic connections, since I dominated the tidbits.
So, I do remember that there was a... that there is some stuff from Daredevil Parts of a Whole in here. And one of my favorite comic book covers is, it's one of those simplest. It's Daredevil just holding the cross is where the opening scene comes from. We got good old Jack Murdock, Battling Jack, as he's known. In this one, he's known as Jack the Devil. I do actually like that change.
I did. Yeah, I was going to say, I do like that change. I was like, oh, okay, that's cute.
Yeah, so he's from here. Honestly, I can't put down a comic for him because he's integral to Matt's origin. So. Everywhere. It's like, some of this stuff is gonna be a little hard for me, because it's like, again, I like Daredevil, he's just not one of my regulars. I guess The Man Without Fear is the best one I can go with without saying Born Again.
I mean, I would also... Okay, yeah, no. No, you're right. Yeah, you're right. No, I was gonna say Man Without Fear. Look at that. Look at you, Drew.
Yeah. So, Man Without Fear, definitely a lot of influence on that, so...
That makes sense considering how much they use that Nick.
Oh man, they need you to know.
Yeah,
they need you to know he is the man without fear.
He was the boy without fear. Now he's the man.
And then he became the man without fear. As for another story thing, actually, there is the Guardian Devil storyline that they homage visually right at the end of the movie when, you know, he, like, jumps off the building, he, like, fires his grapple at the viewer, and he literally says, oh, Guardian Devil. Like, that was the title of a story arc by Kevin Smith, who cameos in this movie, which that's, in terms of the, like, actual adaptation aspects of, like, pulling direct storylines from the comics, this movie doesn't do it that much past what Drew's mentioned, but they reference the creators a lot.
Oh, my God.
Like, more so than I feel like... more so directly than I feel like any other adaptation I've seen, even in recent memory,
like the three,
fighters, yeah, that the Fixer mentions, Miller, Mack, and Bendis. That's Frank Miller, David Mack, Brian Michael Bendis, iconic Daredevil creators. Kevin Smith, who's in the movie, wrote a pretty iconic run on Daredevil.
Miller and Bendis also have the most popular arcs with Daredevil, correct?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and,
no one's touched his crown for Daredevil since...
I don't know, Mark Waid, I enjoyed Mark Waid's run, and Chip Zdarsky, if he keeps it up, could be... In general, Daredevil is one of the best written characters in all of comics. Like, it's rare that you find a Daredevil run that people are like, yo, this fucking sucks ass. Like, it's just consistent banger after banger. And there's one more... Oh, this is a weird one, but... The, like, rapist that he murders at the beginning, like, Jose Quesada, the artist who worked with Kevin Smith was Joe Quesada, who became, like, you know, editor-in-chief, or... wasn't he editor-in-chief, or was he publisher, Drew, of Marvel?
I think he was editor-in-chief at the time.
Editor-in-chief. So he was like a big deal, the big Mamu, as you would call him. So I don't know if that was a reference to him, but like...
That's a weird reference.
I'd be personally offended if... Yeah, I'd be a little bit steamed.
You gotta remember that he wasn't always the biggest fan of The Man Without Fear, originally.
Sure, but I don't know. I wouldn't want my reference to be just the scum of the earth, piece of shit person who, while Daredevil shouldn't be murdering people, a nicer guy couldn't have gotten hit by the train, is what I'll say.
I thought Matt did become a character who was willing to murder. It's like, he's not like Red Hood, where he'll just murder all the criminals, but I thought...
He's got that whole Catholic guilt thing, man.
Yeah, I remember that, but I remember that... Maybe that was when he was, like, leader of the Hand for a while. Maybe that's what I'm remembering.
Yeah, during the Shadow... Well, yeah, but he was literally possessed by a demon then. Yeah, so that that's why he was okay with it. I mean, he murdered Bullseye because he was possessed by an otherworldly entity, and then he felt real bad about it after. Bullseye got better. It's fine. But I think that's about it for the comic connections that are at least springing ahead immediately. I'm sure if we, you know, get into the actual meat, something might pop up, but yeah.
Nice. So let's go ahead and get into our actual discussion. And we wanted to note that some of us watched the director's cut of the movie, and some of us watched the theatrical cut. Basically, the director's cut has that subplot with Coolio, has about 30-ish minutes of stuff, where Matt and Foggy actually have a case to cover and some other things to help actually flesh out certain scenes. But overall, I still think there's not, like, a totally huge difference. Like, director's cuts are really hit or miss with these things, and I feel like it's not too much of a disservice if we watch different versions. But I still wanted to note that we watch different versions. So keep that in mind while we're in our discussion here. And for the sake of transparency, real quick, I want to get a quick note of what cut we all watched. I watched the director's cut. Tristan, what did you watch?
I watched the standard edition because I was not about to pay $15 on Amazon Prime to watch the director's cut.
Drew, what did you watch?
I watched the director's cut.
So with that out of the way, let's get into our actual general thoughts. Drew and Tristan, you both kind of talked about your general thoughts on this movie. I'm going to be the hater. I'm going to get out of the way.
I still didn't like this movie. It's a bad movie.
I thought maybe I'd watch it, and especially watching the director's cut, and go, oh, you know what? I have a little bit of appreciation for it. And some things, sure. But this movie is really... Look, sometimes I think we can watch the Raimi Spider-Man movies or the old X-Men movies, and there's some things you go, that's dated. I'm not saying, like, oh, that was bad that we look back in 2022. It's like, you shouldn't do that. I'm saying just purely, it feels...
Just from a structural standpoint, it's like, oh,
yeah, I'm
right.
Just saying from a structural standpoint, it just seems very dated. Daredevil is the biggest culprit of this I've seen in quite some time. There's a lot of things here to where it just... You can tell the year. If you grew up around this time...
Man,
if I didn't say this was from 2003 multiple times so far in this podcast, I would just guess it was like, oh, mid-2000s. Every making of a mid-2000s movie.
What a 2003-ass movie.
Yes, and we'll talk about the soundtrack. The soundtrack is...
All right, hold on.
I love me some 3 Doors
hold
Down.
Hold on, let's not... We're not going to slander Evanescence. We're not going to slander 3 Doors Down. Like, the soundtrack is one of the pluses for this movie.
But anyways, like I said, this movie just feels dated. Its action sequences are so... It's at this point to where... Yeah, we had the Raimi movies and all that, but at the same time, there's still that time period to where superhero movies, they need to be way too over the top. To where it's
a lot of wire work.
Yeah, it's more cheesier than, oh man, that was a crazy awesome action sequence. And you get a lot of that here. There are some things I actually do like, we'll get into it. I like a lot of the performances actually in this movie. I was surprised at that. There's some moments, especially with Ben Affleck. I think Ben Affleck should get more credit here, man.
Ooh, see, that's, you know, Taylor, we'll save it for the general thoughts, but that's one of the points I've got here.
And don't get me wrong, I'm going to also compare it to the TV series. I feel like it's a little natural.
No, it's
a little bit. And I'm with you, Tristan. the TV series in every conceivable way is better than this movie.
Except and for maybe Charlie the soundtrack.
Cox, I think, is the ideal Daredevil. I think that's one of the reasons why people wanted him back so much as the character, is he was this ideal version. And just to go on the other side of the coin here, the Kingpin, I love Vincent D'Onofrio's version of Kingpin. I think he is an ideal version of Kingpin. That being said, I also think we should give Michael Clark Duncan a little bit of respect as well.
Even before he passed, everyone was giving Michael Clark Duncan the credit, and rightfully so, because he's fucking fantastic in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I remember Michael Clark Duncan's performances back in the day and everything, and I'm surprised. This guy has so much ring, because he can be that awkward guy, he can be that fun guy, he can be that guy that takes everything as a joke, and in this one, he shows off just how scary Michael Clark Duncan can be if you ever get him angry. And
he used to be a stripper.
Yeah, I heard about that.
He used to be a stripper, Taylor. Do you know this?
I actually did know about that. But
Black Hercules, shout out.
The thing is, too, with Michael Clark Duncan could also be cheesy, like he is in this movie, and it still came across. We'll get into performances, too, but I think that was the big takeaway for me. I was like, okay, even with the bad material, I think the cast and crew actually do a really good job. I think the biggest fault in terms of performances is probably Jennifer Garner's Electra.
Yes.
But she gets the least to do, so I can kind of be like, all right, you know what? I'll cut you a little bit of slack.
A little bit of slack, but not too much. Maybe she's one of my points.
But regardless, I think performances are really the big thing I'm going to talk about in terms of positives. But yeah, this movie just, it wasn't it. I thought I was going to go into it and thinking better about it. Still feel about the same, even after watching Director's Cut. Tristan, I guess let's go with you next.
All right, everyone. We're here for some concrete truths here, just some facts. This movie could have been a lot better, at least, you know, in comparison for a 2003 movie. If we change just a couple things. A, we've already touched on it. Jennifer Garner, I'm sorry to say. I'm glad she and Ben Affleck found love and, you know, birthed some children. That's great for them personally. But for this movie and for the world, she was not right for the role, I'm sorry to say. And also, the writing of Elektra in general was piss poor. Shocked she got a spinoff movie. Maybe we should put that on the wheel at some point, because I've not watched it in years. So yeah, Elektra, a whole flop. Another point, Taylor, I gotta disagree with you. Ben Affleck as Daredevil wasn't necessarily hidden for me, and it's not because I think Ben Affleck's a bad actor, nor do I think Jennifer Garner, bad actress. The way they wrote him, just not very sign of the times. Like, for instance, I'm sure we'll delve deeply, deeply into the scene, but the basketball fight scene, or not the basketball fight scene, I'm thinking of Catwoman, the park fight scene, I should say. It was a Freudian slip.
For you to confuse that with Catwoman?
Well, no, and that's the thing. It's a Freudian slip because these are two of the worst scenes in any, like, early 2000s
superhero
movie.
That's what I was going to say. It tells you how bad the scene
is. It has that energy.
You genuinely got it confused.
I got it confused. And
even back with 2003 sensibilities, you were like, this is kind of creepy and cringe at
the same creepy.
Time.
He follows her. She rightfully says, "Leave me alone, strange man." He grabs her arm, and then she karate kicks him. Like, go off. But I digress.
We'll get into it. It'll be its own segment. Trust me, it deserves its own segment.
It deserves a whole segment. But I'm just saying, Matt's writing, potentially Ben Affleck's casting, not great. Jennifer Garner, her acting, and the writing of Elektra, butt-flavored cheeks. But the third major point that I think just undercuts this whole movie is the fact that they wrote Matt Murdock into a situation where he murdered a man in the beginning of the film. That undercuts his entire arc, that undercuts so much about the Daredevil character, and had they just not had him murder that man, maybe beat the shit out of him brutally. Like, I'm not saying don't fuck the dude up, he's a piece of shit. You know, snap both his kneecaps, make it so that he's never going to drink through, or maybe not, you know, eat solid foods again, that's fine. And then he can still have the arc of I'm not the bad guy. But, like, he had him just cut in half by the C train.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of takes away from the I'm not the bad guy thing. And then that would have made it more rewarding when he chooses not to kill Kingpin at the end, Because it's like, oh, shit, like, this is the one dude I really want to kill. But it's like, so you're going to kill Joe Schmo, you know, rapist? Who, again, piece of shit.
But for Daredevil, see, for the Punisher killing...
Yeah, dude, Punisher killing dude...
That makes a lot of sense.
Totally tracks. But for the Punisher to kill this low-level piece of shit, who is a terrible person, and, you know, I'm not making any value judgments on...
You mean Daredevil.
The death penalty, all that crap. But Daredevil. For Daredevil's perspective, he's just one dude who's terrorizing individuals. Kingpin, A, not only personally victimized Daredevil and, like, ruined his life, but also is, like, the biggest crime boss in New York and is actively terrorizing, essentially, millions of people. But you're just gonna be like, oh, I'm not the bad guy now. It's like, all right, dude, like, in for a penny, in for a pound. Like, either you're gonna start murdering people or you're gonna not, you know?
Yeah, you can't let all the crying children determine your position on this, especially if...
Right.
Yeah, especially if you were willingly doing it before crying children, and it's only when that child is afraid of you that you make
it. Yeah, it's like you never thought about people being scared of you when you were letting Jose Quesada get cut up by the C-Train. All I'm saying is, if they had had different, more personable writing for Elektra and Matt, they had maybe different casting, definitely in Jennifer Garner's case, potentially in Ben Affleck's case, and if they just hadn't had him be... you know, straight up murderer, we would at least look back and view this maybe like the same way that we potentially view the first X-Men movie, where it's like, okay, definitely dated, it's definitely a product of the times, but, you know, like, it knew what it was going for and it went for it, and, like, you know, I don't necessarily hate my time here.
Yeah. Drew, real quick, what are your general thoughts on this movie?
I really like this movie. This was actually, like I said, this was my really first introduction to Daredevil. Well, actually, no, I think the animated Spider-Man movie was my first introduction to Daredevil. Not anime movie, animated series, the 90s. But this was my, like, big introduction to Daredevil and everything. And I like this movie. I will acknowledge its flaws. I like seeing all the different characters, like Foggy Nelson and Matt, just being, like, these two old friends that you can tell in their dialogue and everything. However, however, that doesn't take away that, yes, in this movie, Matt is kind of a creep. And it's also really, really weird how they switch from Matt being like this uber vigilante dude to Elektra believing that Daredevil has killed her father and everything, which, by the way, Elektra, can you not see literally the guy who is fighting Daredevil? You can see him, but you can't see the guy fighting Daredevil.
You know what? Not even that. Could she not see the dude that rode into them face first with a motorcycle and threw things at them and killed the driver?
Standing on the motorcycle.
Standing on the motorcycle in a dope leather jacket.
I know. It's like Bullseye's costume might not be to accuracy, not but subtle. It is. Ooh, it looks
he said
cool.
Drip or drown.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely feels like there were some misbeats in it. A lot of misbeats, if I'm going to be honest. But I do, the good and maybe the nostalgia as well always wins out for me, because Michael Clark Duncan is the best Kingpin I've seen on the movie screen to date. So.
Okay. I feel like...
Well, he said movie screen. He said movie screen.
I know. I was like, ah, you got me there.
Look, I cannot ever say that the Kingpin is not...
Look, I think it's closer than people think it is.
It is.
If only for the intro Michael Clark Duncan has with the song Lap Dance by Nerd playing, like, come on. That was hard as fuck. He just standing there fucking the widest power stance you've ever seen in your life. Just with the cane, the diamond tip cane, and that fucking suit, and just smoking that cigar. It was like, oh, someone's talk, boss. Someone always
okay,
does.
Yeah, this movie did make me do one thing. Bring back cigars, you guys. Bring back cigars.
Oh, God. Like, lung cancer's a bitch, but you look so cool.
That's the official stance on Nerd Stomping.
Yeah,
the one thing, like, Michael Clark Duncan has passed away years ago, and it's really sad. We'll get into his performance here, but I just think of, especially with Vincent D'Onofrio, and the way that, like, oh, people want to see a Spider-Verse, and it sucks because if Michael Clark Duncan was still around, it would be really cool to have like a Spider-Verse movie with D'Onofrio's Kingpin and Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin just being the best fucking villains in the entire Marvel Universe, because I think they would be, because they just bring out these cool aspects of Kingpin.
Honestly, Kingpin hasn't had a bad adaptation except for when he was on the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk show. That wasn't good. And also that Daredevil wasn't good either. So we don't.
There was also that weird 3D Spider-Man thing where they made him obese Kingpin instead of that's muscle Kingpin.
When was that? What are you?
Like, I think it was called The Amazing Spider-Man. It's this horrible 3D.
Oh, the Neil Patrick Harris voiced one?
Yes.
Mm.
The one thing I loved about our general thoughts, too, is we all started out with positives, and then there was a big but right in the middle. It's like, yeah, those things, but this movie kind of sucks, too. So, I love how all three of us kind of got around to that.
Oh, yeah, no, this movie's bad. But, like, we had things there's, I feel like there's a diamond in the rough here, had there just been a little bit more fine-tuning.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you can definitely feel like the passion for this project. Like, they didn't go into this thinking, oh, another superhero movie. They were like, oh, this is actually going to be some fun to work on.
There's superhero movies that we've watched or that have came out. And I'm thinking about one recently that dropped. It hit theaters twice. And I've watched it. And I went, that movie, there's no good movie out of it. It was going to be bad no matter what. There was no good movie inside it. Yes, I'm talking about Morbius. Daredevil, there was a good movie.
Somewhere buried deep down.
You saw it. But it never really hits.
Didn't come to the surface.
Yeah, it never really gets to the surface.
By the way, Tristan, I looked it up. It's called Spider-Man, the new animated series.
Oh, well, there you go.
Let's go ahead and dig into this actual movie. And it starts out with a brief look. It starts out by showing you the rest of
a brief look, Taylor?
I don't know if that is brief, Taylor.
It's a good 30 minutes of the film.
It shows like the rest of the movie, and then it goes to his origin. How do you guys feel about Daredevil's origin? I, yet again, going back to what I know about the character, and that is the Marvel Netflix show. And I look at that origin, how I thought they knocked it out of the fucking ballpark. This felt just to me.
The flashback bit goes on a bit too long. It's weirdly shot. And this is where they establish, like, his radar sense, which I will say I do appreciate how much focus they give this, at least in terms of showing it from his perspective. Because that is something we only get once with the Netflix version. I will say that is something I wish we got a little bit more, like seeing things from Matt's perspective. But the way they show his perspective in this, it's not necessarily the best. So it's like, I appreciate the intent, but not the delivery. And that's a lot of this movie. And that's a lot of this, like, opening scene with his origin. I don't like the change of making his dad, you know, like a mob enforcer. Like, obviously he's supposed to be connected to crime because, like, you know, he was throwing fights, but like just having his dad essentially be responsible for him getting blinded instead of it being that, like, Matt, even as a kid, was like a good person and he tried to save an innocent person's life and push him out of the way of the truck. Like, I don't know. Feels like that takes away a bit from Matt's overall story and kind of lends itself more to his whole, like, oh, I'm not the bad guy thing. Whereas it's like, well, if you'd kept it like in the comics where he just pushed you out of the way to save the life, we'd know you weren't the bad guy. But a lot of this movie does not make the case that he is not, in fact, the bad guy.
Yeah, it has its problems. And I know they weren't going to be able to put him in, but Stick is one of my favorite Daredevil characters. I like him. He's like that guy who's always in the middle. You never know where he's going to be when you see him. And also, he's based off of Splinter, or Splinter is based off of him. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell when both have said, like, oh, they could be based off of the other. But I like Stick. He's awesome. So, points for the Netflix for having that, but I know they couldn't have that in the,
I mean, hey, the Elektra movie has Stick.
True that.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think the biggest problem with it is the movie Yari, I don't think, was helped so far. Like, the opening credits, I talked about it feeling dated. The opening credits, I was just like, oh god, what am I in for? And then we go to this origin here, and it feels so disjointed to where...
Incredibly disjointed.
2 years later, we will get Batman Begins. And I really liked the way they went about their origin. And I think they could have went with something like that. It, or something like a what the show would later do. Of course, this with the help of hindsight. 20 years later to be like, oh, it would have been better if they did that. But it's just one of those things, too, where you talked about Jack Murdock, Tristan. And I think the TV show also had this level, for that version of Jack Murdock, there was this level of a little bit of honor, or just something to where you can tell he was a good person, you know? Who just, he's living where he's living in Hell's Kitchen. It's just, he's doing what he's got to do for his kid. And this movie version, you don't really get that. I remember in our season one retrospective of Daredevil, I kind of compared that version of Jack to Uncle Ben a little bit. I was like, he kind of comes across as his Uncle Ben. Not this version. Especially not this version. I can't imagine Uncle Ben just, you know.
Hey, you don't know what Uncle Ben got into before the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. How cool would it be if, like, that was one of the changes that they ever made to the Spider-Man mythos? It's like,
I mean, I don't know if cool is what I describe it as. Interesting, for sure.
I think it would be cool, because how would that affect Peter down the line and everything? It's like, Aunt May having to sit him down. It's like, Peter, I have to tell you something. Ben was running for the Kingpin for a while.
But
every time he knocks someone out, he says, with great power comes these fucking hands.
That'd be great. But the other thing too is I do like how this movie wants to show Daredevil's abilities from his perspective, which pretty cool. I also, again, I'm trying not to compare them so much because they're so many years apart from him, but I think also just the aesthetic of it just being like this radar blue kind of look to it, instead of what the show went with, which was, I see a world on fire. And you can kind of understand why a man who kind of sees a whole world on fire would have some anger issues. So I don't know. I feel that right there, I think you can understand more about Matt's character, where he's coming from, and it does help in that show. He never kills anybody. To where this movie, his whole arc is about, I'm not the bad guy, yet he killed somebody at the beginning of the movie. And it's kind of, we'll talk about that later. It's kind of one of those things that's, yeah, the dude's a scumbag, but it kind of goes against the Daredevil character. And his origin, I think, was part of that. It just felt disjointed. It didn't make any sense, really, for what the movie was trying to go for. And it was just really fucking long. For no reason. Like, it wasn't, I know Batman Begins, it goes into a long backstory and everything, but there's a meaning behind it. That's what I really meant, be like, they could have done something like that. But there's no real point for it. He beats up some bullies in a crazy-ass scene,
yeah,
and that's it.
Well, the difference with the Batman Begins origin is, at least in that, it's like, okay, we're even just seeing this child is like, we're getting his motivations, and then we see him actually training. The extent to which we get to see him training as in this is, oh, my heightened sense of touch gave me, you know, strength and agility. And then he just knows karate.
Yeah, that,
okay.
Why does he put on a suit, and why is he attacking criminals?
Yeah, like, why? What? Why?
Yeah, kind of.
Batman Begins,
that
you understand Bruce Wayne's motivations exactly. In the Daredevil show, you understand Matt's motivations exactly. In this, I still don't fucking know why he has a weird ass suit and runs around and beats up people and kills them apparently. But speaking of the suit,
oh, hold on, because I do want to talk about this while we had it.
Damn it, Drew. Okay, but I said
that was a good transition.
Segue.
It was, but I've been trying to talk and you've kept talking. So
yeah, Taylor.
So yeah, do gotta say, I dislike the fact that Matt Murdock is very much has super strength and stuff in this, whereas before the accident never gave him powers. His radar sense was just his hearing going up to its potential limits and everything. I really miss a Daredevil that was pretty much a human doing all this cool stuff, but because it's like put a superhuman, they thought, oh, we can explain the wire work and stuff. It really takes away from Matt being the character he is, especially considering, like, how the heck is Elektra beating him if he has super strength and she's a normal person?
Writing.
The power of love.
The power of love, that's right.
I've seen enough of The Flash to know it's the power of love.
It's the power. We, Matt, we are Daredevil.
Anyways, let's unfortunately talk about this suit.
All right,
I think there's been worse in movies, but this is one of the worst suits I think I've seen.
See, okay, here's another controversial thing. Aside from his stupid little mask, I actually like the suit. You know, I mean, here's the thing. The Daredevil suit in the comics, it's always been incredibly simple. It literally is just a red bodysuit with the DD on it and the horns. Occasionally he's drawn with like the underwear. Occasionally he's not. For the early 2000s, you know, just having him in red leather, not bad. The mask is dumb. I don't like it.
He looks like a bug.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not great. But from the neck down, the suit itself, I like it. I like the gloves. I like the boots. I like the little DD in the corner. I like the way they do his club and his cane. I like the aesthetic from the neck down.
Look, I kind of agree with you to a point. I think it's also the fact that you see his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this big-ass gap between his neck to where the mask connects.
Yeah, no, that's not a good look.
Ben Affleck's got a chin. Don't get me wrong. There's a reason this motherfucker was Batman.
Yeah.
But that suit, there was nobody in the world who was going to make that look good.
No, it wasn't. If they had found some way to do the... I mean, obviously, this movie came out 20 years before. But if they'd had a cowl similar to Robert Pattinson's in The Batman, where it's like, yeah, his actual suit from that gown has like that collar and it's a separate piece from the cowl, but there's still that neck piece. Like, I think that would have gone a long way to making this not look ridiculous from the neck up.
Drew, what are your thoughts on the suit?
I am in the mid because I remember the terrible looking costumes for a lot of different superheroes. And that's the Spider-Man movies did kind of have the suits a lot better, but other movies didn't. I had to go through a lot of bad superhero movies before getting to the good ones, where we actually had them, like, make them look like armor or be good CGI. This one, it's not too bad, I admit. The face kills me every time. I do like the fact that they had the eye covering to show that he is...
The eyes were cool.
Yeah.
The little red eyes were cool. I like when they have them glow in that one scene.
Yeah. Like, I knew, like, I expected the suit was still gonna be bad when I went in. And it was honestly better than I thought it was gonna be. So, this is another point for nostalgia, but I think it's okay.
Getting to our main protagonist himself, though, let's talk about old Ben Affleck as Matt Murdock / Daredevil. Tristan, you were the one that seemed to be, you're not sure if he was a good fit or not. Why is that?
It's just, I don't know. There's something, I don't know if it's the way they write him. I don't know if it's even the way they just do his wardrobe. I mean, it's early 2000s, so his hair is of the time, but it doesn't help. Just the way, I think it's potentially that I'm spoiled because we've seen how well Charlie Cox portrays him, but even just the way Ben Affleck does, you know, like portrays being blind, he's doing like the cross-eyed thing, and it's just, I don't know. It's a weird energy that he brings to the character, and I don't think that having him do a inner monologue narration over the course of the movie helps, except for the end where he's like a guardian devil. I like that, because I'm like, oh, okay, that's a turn to the story, that's cool. But I don't know. And again, I think Ben Affleck is a great actor. He's one of my favorite live-action Batman, so I don't want to take away... he has the chops. I think it does essentially boil down to the way he was written, and it's just, like, the inconsistency of, like, oh, I'm not the bad guy, but let me get this guy run over by a train, and then let me creep out on Elektra, but then let me be like, oh, I love Elektra so much, and there's this weird mutual attraction. Like, I don't know. He feels inconsistent to me in a way that I just do not care for.
Yeah, that is one thing. Tristan pretty much got some of my things with Matt, but some of the things I do want to talk about are a bit weird. Like, I like the fact that he likes to submerge himself in water to numb his senses.
That's cool. That's cool. The sensory deprivation tank, that's really cool.
Yeah. My only thing is, did it have to look like a coffin? Like, I've actually seen real ones. They don't look like that. Did it have to look like a coffin? Did it have to be that edgy?
Yes.
I'm kind of with you, Tristan. I don't think there's necessarily a problem with Ben Affleck's portrayal. I'm with you too. I think he's a good actor. I'm not as big on him as a lot of people are. I think he's a really good director too. I think he's got a great mind for that. As an actor, it's kind of one of those things that we were talking about in Jurassic Park, that retrospective. And we were just like, we were talking about Chris Pratt then. It's like, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of like there. Ben Affleck. He's fine. Like, there's nothing like, oh no, he's terrible. Don't get him in this. It's just, he is what he is. He's going to be really good in certain things. He's going to be really bad in certain things. Just don't overexpose him. I don't think this movie did. It just didn't give him anything.
It didn't play to his strengths.
Yeah. And if they had played to his strengths, Ben Affleck really could have put it in something really cool, I think, performance-wise. That we go to BVS later, and I think we say the exact same thing. He's like, I think you get more in BVS with him, but I had the same sentiments. I think we could have got something really cool out of his portrayal of Batman. Instead, we got what we got.
I mean, I think we got a cool portrayal aside from the murder.
So, that's the thing. Similarly, they share the same problem of killing their criminals, both Daredevil and Batman, which is maybe Ben Affleck's just cursed.
Maybe.
Taking superhero movies, because that's what he's going to do. He's going to play these murderous heroes. But I wasn't a big fan of this at all. I didn't like this action scene either. He was just hiding up at Josie's. And then the only cool part was like the pool table's caught on fire and he was just staring at him through it.
Really extra. Really extra. It was cool.
But everything else about it, him killing, what's his name?
Jose Quesada.
Quesada. And it's not. See, the thing with Daredevil to me that makes the character so interesting, and that's not coming from a place of me being religious or anything, but I think the character's religion and how integral it is to him is very fucking interesting. This movie doesn't really dive into that, and it kind of spits in its face a little bit by just having him kill and be like, I'm not the bad guy. What?
It's like, we watch you. At the very least, it was manslaughter, but it seemed like at least second-degree murder. Like, you killed a man, bro. You're not the best guy, even if you're not, the bad guy.
So I think that's the thing with me, is just I think they could have really dived into that aspect of the character. They really gloss over it a bit. So that's the unfortunate part. But what do you guys think of him kind of being a killer in this movie?
I don't care for it. I made my thoughts on it clear. It's one of the things that ruins this movie. Well, I mean, the movie in general is bad, so I don't know if there's one thing that ruins it. But you know what I mean? It's the thing, it's one of the three major obstacles that keeps it from being like something that we're like, oh, you know what? It's good for the time.
So Daredevil is one of those heroes where I think he's willing to kill, but only at the like last moment. Cause
I mean, when he's possessed by that demon, sure. But like any other time where he's accidentally caused someone else's death, like where he's himself, like he has been incredibly racked with guilt and like borderline suicidal.
If that's what the movie wanted to go with, I would have been very intrigued by a guilt ridden Daredevil over killing a scumbag, to be honest with you, because we can go to the TV show, how he felt about Punisher. That's his whole argument, is like, hey, that person was a scumbag, sure, but that was still a human being that could have had a second chance, that could have turned their life around.
I mean, he's the embodiment of cool motive, still murder.
Yeah, and this movie really just doesn't give a fuck about that, despite all the things you guys said about the comic connections and everything that I think it's the cardinal sin of this movie, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was a sign of the times with the early 2000s movies and the late 90s. Like, and even going back to the Superman movies with Chris Reeve and the Batman movies, like, they kind of just had the superheroes just kill people. Like, there was
psychopath.
Yeah. But there was, someone needs to stop that, man, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, there was never a big impetus on, like, oh, we can't kill until, like, I mean, I don't want to give Chris Nolan all the credit, but I feel like Batman Begins was the first one where they were like, no, we can't straight up murder someone. Because, like, even in Superman 2 with, the Christopher Reeve, he yeets Zod, a powerless Zod, down a bottomless pit. It's like, okay, Zod's dead now. Like, this is a homicide you just committed, Clark. Like, come on, bro.
Let's talk about Colin Farrell. All right. He's one of our main two antagonists. And while he's incredibly fun in this movie,
so fun.
To bring Morbius back up, he reminded me a lot of Matt Smith from Morbius. He put in a very fun performance that he knew he was in a bad movie and made the most of it. I feel like Colin Farrell did something similar here, and I enjoyed that for what it was. What'd you guys think?
Drew, you go first.
I love his performance. This is definitely not the Bullseye from the comics, but he's just having a blast. It's like every scene he's in, you can tell he's just like, how much more fun and ridiculous can I make this? Oh, I know. My first scene, I'm going to take a paperclip and just literally use it to kill a man. Hey, this
takes 17 paperclips.
It's like, hey, I'm on this plane and everything. I'm going to like literally fuck around with the TSA. It's like, oh, there's a paperclip in my mouth. And it's like, here you go. And it's like, oh, I have like two more in there. It's like, okay, Mr. Troll. I get it. And then the one with the grandma, which is the saddest one for me.
I was real sad, but it was low-key funny, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it was hard for me not to laugh.
It was like, more peanuts, please.
At least Colin Farrell gets to use his accent.
Yeah. Yeah, they let him be Irish. Now, one thing I want to... I feel like we need to talk about it when we're talking about Colin Farrell's Bullseye. Why does... And again, I really enjoy him. He's one of my favorite parts of the movie. But why does... the movie play the sound of a rattlesnake every time he swishes his jacket? Like, he stands on the boat, he's like, oh, I'm gonna come get you, Daredevil, and then
it's like rattlesnake skin, man.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it has, but it's design, like, on it. I don't know why
it's got the design, but like, why
anything in this movie, Tristan? I mean, you watched it.
Yeah, but it's just like they really overused it in a way that's like, okay, this doesn't even seem to track with the rest of the movie.
My initial guess is that initially there was going to be something about him being a predator and Matt's the prey and everything. Like, maybe, like, Bullseye is a snake and he's good, and he always, like, gets his prey or whatever or something. I don't know, because they never put it in the movie. Maybe they just did it because they thought it was cool. Again, this early 2000s.
You know? You got me there.
But Michael Clark Duncan plays our other main antagonist. We talked about his performance before. I don't think we're going to go too far into it. But he plays the Kingpin. I think he gives off a level of just little cheese in his performance, but it's not one of those way too over the top. This was a level of like Willem Dafoe in Spider-Man. To where Willem Dafoe was like, I'm in a superhero movie. There wasn't really a blueprint for how, like, crazy to get in these performances just yet. So he just went as crazy as he wanted. And I think Michael Clark Duncan did something similar, to where he'd be funny one second, he'd be intimidated the next, he'd be a badass the moment after that. Really like this performance here. What do you guys think?
It's one of those things, like, you know, going off what you said, comparing him to Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin, it's like, there was no blueprint, but even so, Michael Clark Duncan understood the assignment. He's like, you know what, I'm just gonna fucking go in there, and similar to how we said, it seemed like Colin Farrell realized this was a bad movie. Michael Clark Duncan's like, you know what, this isn't gonna be the best, but hey, fuck it, I'm gonna give this my all and just fucking nail this shit, just with what I'm giving, and man, boy does he.
Similar to Tristan, I do believe that Michael Clark Duncan was like, I'm going to be in a bad movie, but I'm going to be the best part of a bad movie. And he just went with it. And he is one of those actors I think had fun on set and everything. I mean, you can tell like how close and personal he was getting with some of the actors and everything. It's like, you would tell he wanted to have Kingpin have that air of, you are uncomfortable because you don't know what he's going to do next. You could be the next one to die. So... do like it. I really do like Michael Clark Duncan. I've said a lot about him. I'm not gonna go too much in depth, but it's like, if he was still alive, if we ever did get more multiverse stuff with Daredevil at the helm, would have loved his Kingpin to appear in the MCU.
But let's go ahead and move on to another performance here. Jon Favreau, the future director of the first Iron Man movie, he played Franklin Nelson. Franklin Foggy Nelson here in this movie. What did you guys think here of old Jon Favreau?
He plays Matt's best friend pretty well, and honestly, it is kind of like how I imagined him from the comics, because Foggy was kind of that character who was always of two minds of what him and Matt were doing. Like, he wants to do pro bono work, but then again, he has to also pay the bills and stuff. He's the normal guy on Matt's shoulder who will both give good and bad advice.
I think another thing I really liked about Favreau's performance is, now again, 20 years, TV show, a lot of hindsight. I love how much his character was similar to the TV show, because it really worked in the TV show, even though I had a problem with it in season one, a little bit in season two, but it still is a good character, you know what I mean? And I like how that relationship with Matt, you don't have this, which is very good, because this movie has a lot going on, really, the entire time, surprisingly. And it's really just trying to cram a lot of shit in here. We got Bullseye and Kingpin and Elektra and the origin stories, and it's a lot, all right? So to cram a whole Matt and Foggy breakup or something happening between them in this movie, it wouldn't have worked. I was really happy to see just them having this dynamic that was just, oh, we're really good friends. Tristan, what did you think?
I co-sign everything you guys say. Like, obviously, Jon Favreau, you know, does a pretty solid job with, you know, what he's given, but with everything else going on in this movie, the dynamic between Matt and Foggy just wasn't a focus, and for his capacity in the film, like, he is serviceable in the role, but it's, you know, you don't walk away from 2003's Daredevil saying, man, loved Jon Favreau as Foggy Nelson. What a pivotal part of this movie, I should say.
Let's talk about Jennifer Garner as Elektra. This isn't a knock on Jennifer Garner. It's just, she was not the right person for this role. Did not feel like it. She was written pretty bad to me. It's just, she's the daughter of a wealthy dude. The wealthy dude dies, and all of a sudden now she's going to be training to become a vigilante and kill Daredevil. And then she turns, because she realizes Daredevil is Matt, on a dime. And then she gets murdered right afterwards by a Bullseye. This is it's certainly something. What did you guys think of this?
She's just, I don't know. It's the Elektra they write in this movie is not the Elektra that we know from the comics. It's not even the one we know from the Netflix show. And I can see how Jennifer Garner was right for the version that they had written, but even then, her performance doesn't, it just doesn't do it for me. And she's a solid actress, like, nothing against her. It's just, maybe it's just that I don't personally like this version of the character. Like, I feel like she's lacking that sort of danger and edge that you're supposed to get with Elektra, and, you know, not to keep comparing it to the Netflix series, but that is something that Elodie Young's version of the character had in spades, and it was very accurate to the
comics.
She was
the devil on Matt Murdock's
shoulder. She's the devil on Matt's shoulder. Like, she's, you know, she tempts him a little bit to the dark side. And, I mean, obviously, with these versions of the characters, they don't have that history that they have in the show or in the comics, but you never really get the sense that it's like these people are bad for each other, which is sort of the dynamic you get in the show and in the comics, where it's like, there are arguments to be made. I'm personally a fan of them being together, where it's like they're supposed to be together, but they don't always necessarily have the best influence on one another. And that's not really a vibe we get in this. And I think it's a detriment to the chemistry between the characters, and a detriment to both of the characters as individuals in this movie. And as much as I think Jennifer Garner is a competent actress, I'm just not crazy about the way they wrote her in this movie, and I'm not crazy about her performance.
So I have to agree with Tristan. Like, I feel like for the character they were going for, it's like she's perfect. It's, she's less of the devil on Matt's shoulder and is more of just the she's kind of like an adrenaline junkie in a way, but also she likes that soft side of Matt. Like, she really,
I mean, she did commit a lot of murders without Matt knowing while they were in college, so she's a little bit of a devil.
Yeah, I keep forgetting a
couple of homicides here and there.
I keep forgetting about the Elektra movie. But yeah, so Yeah, it's like for this version, she's more of just like Matt's other half that can also kick his ass. My whole thing is like she is a different Electra and everything. It's not like one of those things where I feel like if you're gonna make a new character, why change everything about them but keep the name? She's still like close to Electra. She's just not an Electra I'm totally fond of. Still like the character in of itself, but I call her kind of fake Electra in my head sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's the main problem I have. Because we talk about it so many times on these episodes, especially when it's comic book movie related. You two are the comic experts. I'm somebody who doesn't know too much, really, in the grand scheme of things, about the comic side of things. So even not knowing much about Electra's character, I knew this wasn't really the comics version. So I think that's something that I talked about many times before with the performances. It just, good try, good effort, not on you. It's on really the writing of these characters. Really just ain't it. And I think the biggest thing that's a knock on both Jennifer Garner's Electra and Ben Affleck's Matt Murdock is there's a scene in this movie that took days to shoot. Multiple days, people, to shoot.
Too many days.
That was a playground fight scene between both characters. And this may be just one of the worst fight scenes I've seen in quite some time.
I'll give it this.
It's up there with the Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
I'll give it this. There is one bit that I did kind of enjoy that I just thought was funny. When he like yeets his cane up in the air and then takes off his jacket and like catches it and like kind of does a squat. I'm like, all right, that's kind of funny. But
I audibly yelled out, where the fuck did his cane go? And then he caught it.
Just hurls it into the stratosphere.
Hey, it's that superhuman. It's a superhuman feeling.
Drew, you're right. It's that heightened touch.
Meanwhile, I want to point this out here. So, for starters, Tristan's completely right. No matter where you are in the stance of movies and everything, and maybe people are a little too sensitive, you will watch this movie and you will watch Matt and you will go, "That is a bit creepy, Matt."
It's creepy. It's creepy.
And you'll continue to watch it and you go, Matt's really not coming off as the best guy here.
He grabbed this woman and followed her without her consent.
So, and then they get into a fight, which the kids who are at the playground, and I believe some of the parents, then turn to watch the fight, and it's, I think the point of it was to be like, oh my god, this is so cool. Well, I couldn't keep thinking was, oh my god, this reminds me of Mortal Kombat Annihilation and how bad this fight scene is. I expected to see the wires of people. That's how bad it started to get. What did you guys think of this thing?
I have to admit that I agree with you. Like, I don't know why, but even after I've rewatched this movie, whenever I remember this fight scene, for some reason I remember them flying. And I know that's not real, but it's like, it could happen in this weird fight scene. It's like they're flying up, it's like when they're launched in the air, instead of like, oh, we're about to fall, it's like they're flying like they're Dragon
catapulted.
Ball Z, like the Dragon Ball Z characters. And it's like, ooh, let's keep this fight going. And I'm like, why does my mind go to that? And it's because this fight scene feels like that could happen. It's that ridiculous.
I brought it up, now I can't stop thinking about Mortal Kombat Annihilation, and now I'm just thinking about, too bad you will die.
See, talking about any Mortal Kombat movie just immediately makes me think of the most recent one, where Noob Saibot yells, he's about to get his soul sucked!
It wasn't Noob Saibot, was it?
It's the Flash character, the speedster guy.
This the super fast dude with the tiger hook swords, I don't know why I said Noob Saibot. It's because he had a similar hood.
I know you're talking about.
I can't remember his name. I think it starts with an S. I'm not a big Mortal Kombat guy.
I am. That's what's killing me about it. I think it starts with a K. But regardless.
No, because the K guy is Kano. I remember that. He's the best part of that movie.
Oh, he is the best part of that movie. But we need to do an episode on either like Mortal Kombat Annihilation or Dragon Ball Evolution.
I mean,
it might be the two things that can one-up this.
That or Morbius, but I still refuse to watch Morbius.
I feel like giving Morbius some time. Let Sony put it out in theaters a third time. Let's see what happens.
I'm giving it nothing.
Wait, I don't know why. I just remembered it. Is his name Striker? That's from the animated movie. He's the police guy. Damn, what's his name? Never mind. I thought I had it.
I think they were partners, Stryker and Cabal.
Cabal. That's who it is, yeah.
But anyways, getting back, man, that was a tangent right there. But I just really didn't want to talk about this fight scene anymore.
I mean, it's so bad. Like, there's a reason why I got it confused with the basketball scene from Catwoman. Like, they are, I mean, I think the Catwoman scene edges it out just a little bit. Just a little bit. If only because the way that's edited with the music, too. And it's like, what's weirder? Two adults acting like they're going to bang it out on a basketball court, like, when one of them is a cop and he's there, like, as a favor to the school to, like, guide these children, or just two random strangers fighting in front of kids, you know? Like, it's a weird energy, and I think the Catwoman scene is edited more strangely, but this is just, man, it's a close fucking second. Like, so much wire work, not a good fight. Like, even if it was supposed to be like, oh man, showing these two great fighters, like, it's stiff as hell when they're not doing the wire work, and it's just, it's...
Why is Electra not also more shocked that Matt is putting up a right? fantastic fight against her?
She's like, oh, she's I thought you were like, blind. This
dude's blind, and then he's just easily just...
In the fight, ridiculous. the reason why I thought she was just going along with it was because they kept showing her smiling at the more they fight, so I think... So I think it's to imply she's enjoying it and the surprise that he can keep up. So that's my whole thing. I don't know if it's like if that was intentional or not, but I feel like it was.
Whatever the reasoning was, it's weird. And that's a constant thing throughout this movie that it's constantly in my notes. I'm just like, why is this movie so weird? It's at the point where it's just, it becomes more of a, I don't want to say a chore to watch, but it's not as fun as we were talking about in the tangent I had about like Dragon Ball Evolution or Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Those movies are so bad, they're funny as hell to watch, and there's enjoyment to get out of it. Or something like The Room. People love to watch The Room because of how bad it is.
Yeah.
This movie is just, it's pretty much the epitome of meh. And just being weird for the sake of being weird. And I just kind of don't get it. It's just... I don't know. But to move on here, let's go ahead and talk about our final fights here. We have Daredevil versus Elektra. Elektra versus Bullseye. Elektra's death at the hands of Bullseye. And then we had Daredevil versus Bullseye. Drew, what are your thoughts on these fight sequences?
So, the whole thing with Elektra versus Daredevil, I thought that was kind of, it's like, I get it, he's not trying to fight her and everything, and he lets himself get stabbed. I kind of just feel like it was a little bit too, maybe it's because I've seen this done so much better now, that I just couldn't get into it this time around. But I feel like if you're gonna like not fight her, you don't have to like take the punches. And then there's the Elektra with Bullseye fight. This one I like a bit more until, but it's like it does have one handicap. Why do you catch the sign?
Is that she tried to catch the sign instead of just moving, I don't know, a foot to her left?
Yeah. It's like, why did you try to catch the sign? Have you ever been able to do that?
Comment question here. I saw this on the IMDb trivia thing. I want to get confirmation from you guys. It was said that the part where Bullseye stabs Elektra and it doesn't go fully through her back.
Yes.
That was something in the comics too, and that's what they're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. It was. And you can kind of see it. I'm pretty sure they do it in season 2 of Daredevil 2 when Nobu stabs her.
Yeah. I do remember that.
See, that's a pretty cool nod, to be honest with you, and it kind of does help with ratings and stuff like that. So that's a pretty cool way to be like, we're paying homage to that, plus we don't have to make a case for why we should get a PG-13 rating.
No.
And there's this girl getting stabbed through the chest with a scythe.
I will say, one positive thing about the Daredevil Elektra fight, like it is stupid, like Drew was saying, but, and you know, he could have done more to prove his innocence. But I did like the bit of dialogue where he's like, I didn't kill your dad, it was a hitman named Bullseye. It's like, normally when you get into one of these contrived things where the hero's fighting the hero, you get some bit of clunky dialogue, like, as much as I love BBS, when he's like, Bruce, we don't have to do this. Like, you don't understand. Matt's immediately like, I didn't do it. It was this other guy. Like, and she still stabs the shit out of him, but.
You know. Yeah, but I do like that he just, like, gets it out. It's like, he says it everything, and she's just not believing at the time. Also, I don't know why, but her saying liar sticks in my head for some reason.
She's like, liar!
Liar!
It's like, okay. Why are you saying it like that?
I have no idea why it sticks in my head like that, but it...
No, it was... if you hadn't mentioned it, I was going to. It's a weird delivery.
Yeah. I don't even think that was her best take. I think they just said, I don't know, it sticks in her head, to use that one instead.
But yeah, I'm with you guys. I don't really care for the Daredevil versus Elektra fight. It kind of just, it felt like filler. To where you knew at some point Elektra was going to finally realize it. And it was, for some reason, oh, Matt's Daredevil. Mm. Should have probably figured that one out.
Probably should have figured it out a little bit sooner.
Yeah,
a little bit sooner.
What, actually? No, sorry, go ahead. I got one more positive about this before we move on from this fight.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't think that she should figure out Matt is Daredevil because she's not had any interaction with Daredevil. So.
She fought the man in a playground. And they both were on equal footing.
That's a pretty good point. I feel like once you fight someone, Drew, you know them, you know?
Yeah,
and apparently there's this devil of Hell's Kitchen, which that's not what he's called here. He's called the Man Without Fear all the time in this movie. But he's following her around right when she seems to be in danger. Where's Matt? I don't know. That's a little weird, don't you
think? Who's to say where Matt is, you know? Couldn't possibly be on this roof.
It's a blind man jumping off of rooftops. That's something to get past. But yet again, I would like to point out that blind man fought Elektra in a playground. And with kids and parents watching and cheering exactly. them both on for some reason.
And she didn't notice that his canes looked remarkably like the little sticks she was fighting right there.
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting that they made it that his cane is the bully club in this version.
They do it in the comics, too. That's cool.
They changed that in the comics later, so that way they were, like, different design and everything. It's like, that's only in the early days, because otherwise it's a very...
Well, they have it in the Mark Waid run, too. Pretty sure it's not in the Charles Soule run, I don't think, but it is in the Mark Waid run. He's got the hooked billy club. But one positive thing I will give about this fight, I do like how much they have Jennifer Garner like twirling the Psi around, where it's like, okay, it seems like she actually knows what she's doing with these things. Like I thought yeah. That was cool. But other than that, no.
With the Elektra Bullseye fight, I do agree with Drew. I think it made the character come across as kind of dumb in that instance, to where she just didn't move out of the way and said, I'm gonna try to catch it. Well, don't try to one-up the man called Bullseye, who just happened to catch yours, and he never misses, by the way.
He never misses.
Except for that one time.
But then every time he doesn't miss, he goes, Bullseye, eh? You're like, alright, bro, I need you to tone it down there, Chief.
Nah, keep chewing the scenery. You're the most interesting thing in this movie. Besides Michael Clark Duncan.
I mean, performance, yes, it just has the character itself. Like, in the context of the movie, it's more like, I need this dude to calm down. But Colin Farrell's performance, no. He, if anything, he can ramp it up a bit more, and I'd be into it.
But that death scene, it was fine for what it was. It really, I guess it got Daredevil in his final heroic moment. It got us back to the beginning of the movie. I don't know why the movie had to begin the way it began, other than to give you that image of Daredevil wrapped around a cross, which was...
That was pretty cool.
Pretty cool, pretty but cool. They never... Again, it's like I was saying with Matt Murdock and his faith in this movie. They don't dive into that. It's just something that's like, oh, Matt's a Catholic, I guess.
It's so... all over the place that by the time you get back to what is now the beginning of the movie, you forgot that this is how the movie started.
Yeah, and we got a Kingpin versus Daredevil fight. What'd you guys think of this?
I like it.
I love it. It's also like has that 2000s cheese of the villain is about to win and then he can't help it. He monologues.
Hey, you need a good monologue every now and then.
You need one, and I would never take that away from villains. Or heroes, because heroes do it too. It's just that heroes somehow have the spider sense to react when the monologue is about to be interrupted, while villains don't.
See, yes, but also, like, I like this fight scene up until you get to the weird bit where he's like, oh, if I hit him with, you know, if I shoot all this water, then I'll be able to actually see him. And it's like, that's not how we didn't talk about that earlier. That's not how his powers work. That was a dumb little bit he had. It's like, oh, it's like I can almost see you. Like, no, what? Why is it? What? So then it feels like a weird MacGuffin where it's like, Matt, if you have to wait for someone to get rained on before you can see them in a fight, how have you been kicking all this ass for however long you've been Daredevil? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there's also a whole thing with me of where it's like, if you just did one little costume change, this would have been perfect. Keep him in his suit, and his suit's wet, so it slows him down a bit. And Matt is able to get the upper hand over that. It's like, it's kind of like with the, what's that other one by Frank Miller? The Dark Knight Returns, when he's fighting in the mud hole. Mm-hmm.
In the mud pit? He's like, this isn't, you don't understand, son, this isn't a mud hole, it's an operating table, and I'm the surgeon.
Oh, so cool. But yeah, it's like, if they had done that, then it would make sense. But because he lightened his load, I feel like, nah, he should be kicking Matt's butt.
Yeah, I thought the scene was alright. It's one of those things to where the ending of this movie is actually pretty damn great. Unfortunately.
Ending's good.
You look, no. Oh, I thought you were being sarcastic.
No, bad. No. I'm agreeing. I'm co-signing.
Okay, so the ending of this movie is actually pretty damn great. He's like, no, I'm not the bad guy. The one problem is you kind of still are.
You committed because a murder. You went
again, yeah, you did a murder. Yes, scumbag murder. And everything. But because you did that, and because the movie doesn't dive into the things that they could have dived into to make this whole arc very intriguing, we don't get that. And for the last time, I'm going to bring up the TV show. Because the TV show did something similar to where Matt was going after Kingpin so hard that he was like, I'm going to have to kill him. There's no way that I'm not going to be able to arrest this dude. He has hands in the FBI, the cops, everywhere. And it's a whole season-long struggle where he's talking with his priest about it. The priest gives out this awesome story about evil being within everybody, and that was really cool. But my point is you have this awesome story where it's diving into his faith, his own morality, how he's struggling with that. And this movie goes, oh, I'm just not going to kill anymore.
And it's like, what?
It's just, okay, well, that's good for you.
Which, you know, I hate to say it, but very similar to Batman and Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I'm one of the apologists for the Martha scene. I am. That being said, it is a quick fucking turnaround.
It's a very quick turnaround, but I like it.
So my problem with the Martha scene is just the fact that Superman says Martha, and I don't feel like there was context behind him saying Martha. Like, why say Martha over Mom?
Yeah, no. If he had said something like, save my mother, save Martha. Like, if he'd said, save my mother first, then it's like, oh, okay. But just going straight to save Martha, you're like, all right.
Yeah, it's awkward. And that's the only reason. It's like, I do like the scene. I like Batman seeing what he's become and everything. But in Daredevil, there's none of that. There's none of that. There's not even a buildup of that. We don't really get to see Matt really regret his actions or even contemplate not killing someone until he finally has to make the choice.
Yeah, he has that. I think he has a scene in the church with the priest about it, sort of. And then he has that one scene where the kid is treating him like a monster. It's like, I'm not the bad guy here, and that seems to really get to him. And that's kind of the extent of the entire character arc from that. So while I love the ending of it, the journey was just not well executed in the slightest. They focused on everything else, and why I go, if they had taken out maybe Elektra from this movie, maybe Bullseye from this movie,
can't lose Bullseye. Come on.
Yeah, I'm saying, well, I think you could.
No,
because as much as I like Colin Farrell's performance, this movie doesn't flow well. You have too much fucking going on. You have Bullseye as a hired hitman trying to kill everybody, which he successfully does. You have Elektra going on. You have our own little mini origin here, which we get more of in our own spinoff. But regardless, you have, in a director's cut, an entire fucking court case with Coolio that doesn't really...
Forgot about that bit.
That, yeah, that helps with Fisk in the long run with him being arrested. But in the grand scheme of things, there's just too much going on here to where if you just peeled it back a few layers and you had a more personal story, even in the early 2000s, I think you could have been very fucking successful. Keep in mind, this was made in 2003. I mentioned it before in this show. 2 years later with Batman Begins. One of the key things that movie did is it peeled shit back. It gave things time to breathe. It didn't introduce Joker in its first movie along with three other villains.
Yeah. I also do feel as though that having the Kingpin arrested movie one does take away from the untouchable Kingpin of crime vibe if this movie did go into a trilogy.
It makes him feel less imposing and like less of a threat overall.
Yeah, more like just a villain of the week.
But let's get into our final pros and cons here, along with our final thoughts. Drew, what are your final pros and cons and final thoughts on Daredevil, the 2003 film?
Gonna go into the pros first. Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin. Freaking bullseye every scene he has. Like, this guy is literally in a full body cast and he still throws a needle to kill a fly. So that's pretty fun. I still like Ben Affleck as Matt Murdock. It's like, I don't think he was the problem with it. I think it was more of just the writing around the character. And the small details they give Matt with how he goes to everyday life, how he folds bills to know their value and everything, the sensory deprivation chamber and everything. I like those small details, especially if you're doing a hero with unique senses or something. Like, it helps flesh them out, feel real. Oh wait, one more pro. Music. This has some banger music.
Look, okay, this is your pros and cons. The one thing I'll make a case for is so did Suicide Squad, the first one.
Academy Award winning film.
That being said, do any of those songs fit with Suicide Squad? Maybe a few of them. Not all of them. And it comes across as very fucking all over the place because of that reason. So that's the one thing I'll say on the soundtrack, is it's so all over the place that it just throws everything off. It was a problem with Suicide Squad. I think it was a problem with this, but these are your pros and cons.
I disagree. I don't think it was the perfect matches, but it's still think it, like, they don't like take away from the scenes. Where Suicide Squad, it feels very invasive. Now cons, honestly, we've gone through them all through this freaking podcast, so.
Final thoughts, though.
Yeah, final thoughts. This has potential. You can see it. You can almost taste it. It's just, they just didn't do it right. I guess they burned it in the oven or something.
This movie is an idiot sandwich. you fucking donkey.
You fucking donkey. Where's the lamb sauce?
So, pros for this movie, Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin, Colin Farrell's Bullseye, and the soundtrack. And I'll also say I appreciate all the comic book references and, like, homages to creators and whatnot, even aside from just, like, the visual cues of, like, oh, you know, Bullseye stabbing Elektra the same way he does in the comics, but, like, actually referencing the creators, iconic creators of Daredevil in the world of the movie. That's not something we see a lot these days, and I really like that touch. As for cons, pretty much everything else about this film. I'm very entertained by the movie, and again, I would watch it, you know, multiple times a week if someone asked me to, but like, it's not good, and I'm not gonna sit here and act like it's seriously good. One other extra con that I'm going to go into more detail on because we just forgot to bring it up in the movie. Why does Matt have a bat cave in his apartment? He can't afford that. He has no use for that. Does no one... clearly he's just, you know, attracting plenty of strange women and bringing them home. Is no one questioning why this blind man has this weird bat cave aesthetic in his home?
I'm also questioning why at the beginning of the movie where he goes out as Daredevil for the first time and then he comes home.
Uh-huh.
And there's a voicemail from Heather.
Oh, boy, Heather.
And she's breaking it off with Matt. Uh-huh. And it's pretty well implied that, you know, they've done the old devil's tango before.
Oh, they've made the beast with two backs, for sure.
And then Matt takes off his suit, and there's all sorts of scars on his back. And that brought up a question that the movie introduced the problem. They were like, oh, well, you know, they've done a little mm-hmm. devil's tango. And then Matt has a bunch of scars on his back in back-to-back scenes. And I'm like, well, she didn't notice that?
See, that I don't question as much because Matt do be getting around in the comics. And people don't really be questioning why what's up with these scars. Like, he's just like, oh, I'm clumsy. I mean, that's the thing we see in the Netflix show, too, where he's like, oh, I got hit by a cab or something.
And I think in one comic, it was explained that those were from his childhood when he was, like, still, like, trying to learn boxing from his dad's gym and stuff, so...
Either way, his Batcave's weird, and it's a con for this movie, as is pretty much everything that's not the two villains and the soundtrack.
Also, how does he afford an apartment that big in New York?
That's a good question, especially when his clients are paying him in flute, or, well, not flute, fluke? What was fluke. The flute?
It's fluke. Fish.
Fluke? Yeah. So, he's getting paid in fish, but he's, they're again, he's got this Batcave.
For sure.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
at least not to our knowledge.
With his hearing, I don't know. That might not be the best form of currency. But yeah, no, this is a bad movie. I enjoy it. You know, it's really entertaining to me, and I'm very nostalgic for it. But it's a bad movie.
I don't think this movie ever hits the level of so bad it's good, like a Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Dragon Ball Evolution, The Room. It doesn't hit those levels to where you can just have a few beers and have a lot of fucking fun with it. For me, I know Tristan has said that he's done this in the past, and it's one of the movies that he loves to watch, and that he just said it's a bad movie.
It's bad. But it sucks, but it's entertaining.
There's stuff to like about it, I think. It's a lot of the performances from Ben Affleck. I'm still, after even all of our discussions, I still think he was fine as Matt Murdock. I just don't think he was given the best material. Jon Favreau was really good, Michael Clark Duncan, Colin Farrell, and I do want to throw Jennifer Garner in. I know it wasn't the best performance of the movie, but again, I go back to the material being, I think, the main problem more than anything. Cons, pretty much everything else. This movie is very dated. The playground scene deserves to be talked about as a con of itself. This is a movie that had a lot of potential, I think, though. It's just, you needed to peel back a few things. You needed, in my opinion, to take away maybe a Bullseye, maybe Electro. Just have a more personal story, because that's what it felt like the character was going to go for. And so, at the end of the day, where he goes, I'm not the bad guy, you're just more confused. So, that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's a very meh movie to me, and, I'm very glad we're going to be getting Daredevil Born Again sometime in 2023, 2024. Oh, man. Let's go ahead and get the fuck out of here. What are we working on, and where can people find us? Drew, what you working on, and where can people find you?
You can find me on Fanfic World on YouTube. Pokemon video got delayed a bit, but it will be up at the time of this recording. It'll be up in at least a week. But, yeah, you can find me on YouTube on Fanfic World, where I'm making my own fake Pokemon for 3 videos and everything. So, you know, check it out and determine, can my Pokemon actually exist in the Pokemon world, or would they break the game? I'm pretty sure only the third one would. And you can also find me on Twitter, DrewGarrison_. And I'm also on Instagram, so, you know, look me up.
Tristan, what you working on? Where can the people find you?
As per usual, I'm still over at Screen Rant, chugging out some quality content. Is Storm a better leader than Captain America? Why don't you go on over to Screen Rant and see what I have to say about that. And if you're looking for me on the socials, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at BackIssueBens.
I could go either way on that subject, by the way.
All right, well, then you can be wrong, because Storm's a better leader. Spoiler alert.
We'll have words when the mics are off.
I would assume that would probably be your argument there. That was the title of the article, but
yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily a spoiler. But be sure to check that out from Drew and Tristan. As for me, you can find me on this podcast here. You can find me on our other podcast for the time being. Be sure to, if you liked what you heard today, you can join our Discord. Right now, it's the best way to get in contact with us. And also on Discord, you will be able to see our upcoming schedule. So if you want to watch something that we're going to be watching, so you know ahead of time, be sure to join our Discord. We will have our schedule up for you. I believe Tristan will be the one posting those. If you also have the time, consider leaving us a rating on whatever platform you listen to us on. It would also be great if it was a positive one. If you're a video game fan, you might also enjoy our video game news podcast called Power Up and Game, where we talk about some of the trending stories around the gaming industry. And finally, be sure to check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, comics, and so much more. We get reviews, we get guides, we get opinion pieces, you name it is over on thenerdstash.com, so be sure to check that out. I want to thank Drew and Tristan for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. We'll be back next week with a retrospective on a classic movie that I haven't seen before, which has been a recurring thing on this podcast over the past 2 months or so. And that retrospective is going to be on Alien.
Fuck yes. That's a picture.
Can't wait to hear what Tristan and Drew have to say about this one. And to actually see why people love the Alien franchise so much. But that's for another time. We'll see you next week.
I'm not the bad guy.